Welcome this week to History in Minutes. No terms, no mercy, the idea of unconditional surrender. What happens when a war ends and one side doesn't get to negotiate? No terms, no compromises, just total defeat. That's unconditional surrender. And it's reshaped the world more than once. From the battlefield to the big screen, unconditional surrender is more than just military jargon. It's a moral and political statement. And it's the topic of our podcast today. And in this month just passed, it's the 80th anniversary of the atomic bomb attack upon Japan. And this concept of unconditional surrender is at the heart of some of the historical controversy relating to the attack upon the two cities in August 1945. So let's get started. Unconditional surrender is a surrender without any guarantees or negotiations, where the winner dictates all the terms. And there are some ancient examples of this, where the Roman Empire demanded a total surrender of a combatant they're at war with. And the phrase tended to become popularized by its use by General Ulysses S. Grant during the United States Civil War, and when he demanded the surrender of one of the Confederate forts. And he'd said no terms except an unconditional and immediate surrender. So if you were at war with another country, your nation is fighting, and for whatever reason, it can't continue to fight. If it says to the other side, what are your terms? And they say, well, we want X, Y, and Z. That's a conditional surrender. But if you say to the other side, well, what are your terms? And they say there are no terms. You will get none. You will get none. That is an unconditional surrender. And you can see why some nations would be extremely reluctant to surrender to another nation, to another opponent, upon those terms. It makes your own population very vulnerable to all sorts of nasty eventualities. The benefits of unconditional surrender are that there is a clear end to the hostilities. There's no future claims that we could have won. An example of which is what you get in World War One. When World War One initially ended through an armistice, a ceasefire, there wasn't a surrender. Though there were some aspects of the German armed forces that were interned and put under a very tight control, like, for example, the German Navy. In the wake of what occurred in 1918, a very dangerous myth grew out of the armistice events, and that was the stab in the back myth. And this was a myth, it grew into sort of like political propaganda during the 1920s and 1930s, and it was used quite effectively by the Nazis to say to the German people that the German army was never defeated. It was stabbed in the back by a bunch of traitors on the home front, which, you know, included Jews and communists and other malcontents. So that's one of the clear benefits of unconditional surrender. The conquering power enters the territory and they can pretty much reconstruct the state or, you know, society, if it wants to go that far, and the economy in a way that accords with the way it feels it should be. So when the Allies took over part of Germany in 1945, there was a thorough denazification campaign. And it could do that because it had the power to do that because of the unconditional nature of the surrender. The downside of it is that it's harder to achieve peace. And it can include desperation where two of the countries fight on to the bitter end, which is what happened with Germany and almost the case with Japan. And it's the situation with Japan that interests me today because the big stinking controversy about the use of the atomic bombs, it goes back to this belief that Japan was close to surrender. And the only reason why Japan couldn't surrender was because of the Allied insistence upon unconditional surrender. This idea of unconditional surrender, it grew out of a number of political conferences during World War II. The first mention of it is at the Casablanca Conference in 1943. That's right. And then it was reaffirmed again later on, particularly at the final conference between the big three at Potsdam after Nazi Germany had been defeated. And it was the Potsdam Declaration that the Japanese had to deal with. The argument goes that the Japanese were ready to surrender. They wanted to surrender, but they couldn't surrender because of the question, because of the issue of unconditional surrender. And what unconditional surrender would have meant to the Japanese was that its whole government would have been levelled. That would have meant that the emperor, who was a figure of some great religious significance to the Japanese, it just wasn't a political job. The emperor wasn't just a political position, it was also a religious position of great significance to the Japanese. They felt that they couldn't surrender because they wouldn't consent to the abolition of the monarchy. Now, what of course happens is that the Americans dropped the first bomb on the 6th of August and the second one on the 9th of August. And this causes the emperor to initiate a process where Japan would accept the terms that had been set down in the Potsdam Declaration, which was unconditional surrender. They were the only terms. Now, once this process began, there was an attempt to secure the ongoing status of the emperor. That was rejected by the Americans on the 12th of August. The nature of the reply, though, was interesting, and there was quite a bit of discussion within the White House amongst the key advisors and Truman as to how to respond. And the reply was couched in a way that implied quite a bit, but actually didn't promise anything. And after that, Hirohito wasn't left with much choice. And Japan commenced the surrender process on the Potsdam terms. I suppose you could summarise all this in that unconditional surrender is as much about peace as it's about power. You know, someone's drawing a line in the sand. An appropriate response is at what cost, I suppose. Thanks for listening to History in Minutes for this episode. If you enjoyed this quick dive, share it. Please subscribe. That's how I keep myself in supplies. And join us next time for another slice of the past that still shapes our present.